This is Fresh Air. Very little of what novelist and journalist Carl Hiaasen has written has endeared him to the Florida Chamber of Commerce. His column for the Miami Herald and his novels deal with what he sees as the corrupt relationship between business and politics in the Sunshine State. Hiaasen is that rare species, a Florida native. And if he had his way, he would drive the tourists from the beaches, rip up the malls, close Disney World, and return the state to the pastoral beauty of his youth. He is quoted as saying air conditioning and mosquito repellent were the ruination of Florida. His latest novel, Striptease, involves a shady politician, David Dilbeck, who's in the pocket of the sugar industry and is a sucker for a naked woman. His current obsession is Erin Grant, a new dancer at the Eager Beaver, an upscale strip club. She works there to raise money to pay a lawyer to regain custody of her child. Since he's also a journalist, Hiaasen said finding a model for the corrupt Congressman Dilbeck was easy.
You could almost, fire a dart gun in the halls of Congress and in anyone who might fit the category. But I mean, the actual event, the opening of the book, for example, which takes place in one of these new so-called upscale adult clubs in Fort Lauderdale, where the congressman behaves rather badly and draws a lot of attention to himself. And that was inspired by an actual incident, which my own congressman in 1978 was a six-term Republican congressman from Broward County, Florida, was arrested in a strip joint at about 2 in the morning on all sorts of problem charges that had to do with his behavior relating to the women and the other customers. And it was pretty much the end of his political career. And it always stuck with me that here was a guy whose job was pretty much a cinch, and he kept getting reelected, every 2 years. Why? What compelled him to do that sort of thing, to risk it all just to go in there for some cheap thrills? And so, that sort of stuck with me, and that launched the book, but there are many other models and inspirations for what happens after that.
Well, what kind of research did you do for the book?
In terms of the political stuff, it's just obvious it's on the front pages every day. In terms of writing about, for instance, the sugar industry, Big Sugar, I do that on a regular basis in my column, and it certainly we covered well in the Miami Herald. So, I mean, that was right at my fingertips, as it were. The other research about the clubs, I had to pop in here and there, and I, as I said, less than you would think. I mean, my main interest was in talking to some of the performers who, especially the women who were single mothers with kids, because that's the hero of the book. The heroine of the book is a single mother with a child, and I wanted to find out what the kind of struggles you have trying to have a job like that and raise a kid by yourself at the same time. So they were great conversations and they were great interviews. The only trouble was that they would be interrupted about every 3.5 minutes when they just get up spontaneously and begin dancing and throwing lingerie around, and it's distracting, and it's somewhat hard to keep your, not only your train of thought, but I mean, and they're very nonchalant about it to them because it's just business. But when you're sitting there having, what you think is a very quiet, subdued conversation, and this one dancer was showing me pictures of her daughter and school and everything, and the next second they're sort of up on the table doing what they do, it was tough to interview under those circumstances.
Well, the women in your novel, or the women that work at this strip joint, have really more class, more daring, more smart than most of the other characters in the book. Did you find that to be true?
Absolutely. I mean, the men in the customers in these joints are the suckers. I mean, men are suckers anyway, but I mean, the show, when I went into these places, it was, believe it or not, it became much more interesting to watch the behavior of the men than it was the dancers, because the dancers were, I mean, it's a very cold-blooded sort of mission, and that is to separate you from your money. Because that's what they do for a living. I mean, they dance, and you give them a tip, and that's how they make their money. But they're very smart and cunning about it. The men, however, especially after a couple of drinks, are just total, they fall hopelessly in love with whatever pair of legs is on the table at the time.
Empty. Because they think she's doing it for him.
Oh, right? They think that they've just charmed her into just disrobing on a moment's notice. When in fact she's actually thinking about, gee, I got to go to the laundromat after work. They think that she's thinking about them and what a handsome, dashing guy. They would tell me their tricks. It was really interesting. They would say, well, the way we usually work it, if you muss up their hair a little bit, the customer they're talking about, or if they're wearing a necktie, you adjust their necktie a little bit, and you've got them. They're hooked. They'll sit there all evening, and they'll give you every bit of cash they got, and it's absolutely true. I mean, I watched it. It was amazing, and the guys are just predictable like that. We're just total saps. And, you know, I don't know whether it's ego or alcohol or that deadly combination of both of them. Then at the end of the evening, of course, the girls vanish. And they can't, the guys are all sitting, well, where did she go? Well, you're out of money, pal. She's gone.
Well, there's a phrase called schmoing out.
Now, you know, I've heard that. That isn't in the book, but I mean, yeah. I've heard that phrase used in the jargon in these clubs. And that is when a guy just sort of totally goes gaga over a particular dancer, and she dances pretty much until he's out of money. And now, though, some of the clubs in Lauderdale have installed cash machines, which is really deadly. Not only can you spend your whole paycheck on a Friday night, you can go and on credit, you know, completely bankrupt your entire family for the sake of one evening of dancing. So they've got these cash machines you go to now. So it's really amazing. It's an amazing enterprise. And it's, like I said, it's proliferated to the point. The club owner in Lauderdale also owns quite a number of clubs in Manhattan and in Dallas and other places. I mean, and he's a multimillionaire. He probably has 60 clubs going around the country right now. So this is sort of a new thing, the idea of going in a coat and tie and it being a very respectable place where no hanky-panky at all goes on. I mean, the place is crawling with guys with no necks who just would love to remove you at a moment's notice. So there's nothing untoward happening. Except, guys are sitting there sort of parting with their money.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we have to take a very short break. My guest is Carl Hiaasen. He's an investigative journalist and columnist for the Miami Herald. He's also the author of a number of novels, and his latest one, they all take place in Florida, is called Striptease. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Carl Hiaasen is my guest. How much money could a woman make on a typical night?
One night, a dancer that I talked to, the night I was there, she made $1,500.
Cash?
Cash, yeah. And that's a good night. Most of them make between $2,500 and $3,500 a week.
Do they do it for the money, or do they also get off on the power of kind of taunting men in the audience?
Yeah. Both. I mean, because it is a tease after all, but there's certainly an element of control. I'm not sure powers of it, but they're in control and they know it. So, and there's a little bit of a thrill to be the center of attention. Some of them were very frank about that when they talked to me. Because A, it was very safe. Nobody laid a hand on you, except of course in the friction dancing joints. And then it wasn't the customer; it was the dancer again who sort of dictated the terms of that little enterprise. But the by and large, they were in it for the money. And most of them, and I had several of them say to me, "Look, you know, how long can I do this? Maybe 2-3 years. I can put a lot of money in the bank. I can put my kid in private school. I can pay off my car." Many of them were in college. I had one, and I'm very seriously, who had already applied to the FBI Academy, and she was dancing that night I was there. And there are no stereotypes that go along with this. There are just a lot of different reasons why they were there. Oddly enough, I think I only met one who honestly believed that she was going to be discovered, that some movie director was going to walk in and spot her, and then she was going to be whisked off to Hollywood. I talked to quite a number of the dancers, and I really only, it was a very young woman who was maybe 18, 19 years old, and who really thought that this was her ticket to stardom. Most of them were much, much smarter than that, and they know what it was all about. It was a business enterprise.
You feel comfortable in places like
no,
this?
No, uh-uh.
Not at all?
No, not really. And it gets tedious and boring after a while. It honestly does. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. There's a character in the book, the bouncer in the book, or I should say the floor manager. They don't like to be called bouncers. Shad is his name, and his problem is he's been in the business 11 years, and he is totally numb to the sight of the most gorgeous woman. I mean, does anything for him now, except the only thing that excites him is the sight of women with clothes on, because he's been working in nude joints for 11 years, and he's had it, and he's trying to get out because he realizes he's just been, you know, almost bored to tears by the whole thing. And that is something I drew from talking to people who worked there and from sort of watching the faces on some of the guys, the bouncers in these places. I mean, they might as well have been working on a Chrysler assembly line or selling automotive parts at Kmart. I mean, they were really, you know, it was like they were in another world because they've been at it so long.
Well, how true was it that there was, or even is, I guess, in the Fort Lauderdale area, a place where there's cream corn wrestling?
That's
such
true.
A thing?
Oh, yeah. There was. It was a lounge in West Palm Beach. They don't do it anymore. I think there was a problem with the health department. They actually had four kinds of wrestling you could do, and you could wrestle. The big ad that said, wrestle nude women, which in and of itself is sort of a strange aspiration. But, I mean, I guess enough guys were drunk enough to do it. But you could wrestle them. In the old days, it was like mud wrestling or oil wrestling. Now they've gone into the four major food groups. They had some cream corn. They had dill pickles. You could wrestle in a vat of dill pickles, which is scary. I don't even want to think about that. They had, you could wrestle in chocolate pudding. And my favorite was pasta, because I didn't really specify what kind of pasta. And I thought that was important, that they should have been a little more specific in the advertising. So when the fellow from Vanity Fair was interviewing me, he said, well, I'm going to go find the cream corn wrestling. You want to go with me? And I said, absolutely not. I said, I would rather have dental surgery, if you don't mind, than to go watch two grown people wrestle around in a vat of niblets. I just don't think so. But he intrepidly went to West Palm, and he went to this lounge, and he found the pit closed. And he asked, did you ever have cream corn wrestling? He said, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. But in the back room, apparently, they had pictures all over the walls of cream corn wrestling in its heyday, and it was hugely popular. And he said there was also wrestling, so some dill pickle extravaganzas. So, I mean, I was grateful. He had the good journalistic instincts to go there, but you couldn't have got me up there with an Uzi, because that's not one of my... I would have had nightmares for years about that.
Carl Hiaasen is my guest, and he's a journalist with the Miami Herald and also a novelist as well. His latest book is called Striptease. You made a statement a number of years back that didn't exactly endear you to the mayor of Miami.
Which one was that? I made a number of statements.
Or various Chamber of Commerces. You said there's nothing wrong with South Florida that a good Force 5 hurricane couldn't fix. I was wondering, when Hurricane Andrew moved across South Florida, if you felt responsible.
Well, not at all. I mean, hurricanes are a force of nature. Back in the 40s and 50s, we had one or two a year in South Florida. People don't remember that. And now we go 30 years without a big storm, and everybody's shocked when it comes and it blows everything down. That's because we built these houses with basically chewing gum and toothpicks, and it's no surprise that they fell down. The real crime of all that was the misery that all these people had to suffer because they were sold a bill of goods. And I didn't feel responsible. I mean, it was a matter of time before we got hit by a hurricane, and it was up not to me but to the county and state and other agencies and regulatory agencies to make sure that the houses would stand up, the people would be prepared and evacuated and taken care of afterwards. And a lot of that didn't happen, and I don't feel responsible for that at all. My only thought on that given day was that, and I always, this is sort of a recurring theme of the novels, is that we live in a tropical zone down there, and it's not just hurricanes. There's a lot of wildlife and critters and things. I mean, we sort of kicked a lot of natural things off that land when we went down there and started paving, putting up our hotels and setting up our cabanas. I mean, we displaced a lot of natural elements that continue and occasionally come back to haunt us. And a hurricane is just one of many hazards that's liable to pop up down there. We're just not ready for it. And if we live in a place like Florida, which is in the tropics and subject to these storms, we've got to be prepared for a worst-case scenario. And Hurricane Andrew was not a worst-case scenario. It was a very centrally located, dry hurricane that really breezed through in 4 hours and still virtually destroyed a huge part of the county.
But why are the housing codes so lax?
Well, because you have, as always, the builders and developers in Florida are and always have been the major political force. They do not want strict enforcement. They don't want a building and zoning department that's going to go out and hassle them. They want a building and zoning department that's going to be their friend. The Herald's written numerous stories about not only corruption, but we did stories about people who are supposed to be inspecting roofs in these subdivisions who never even had a ladder on their truck. They would drive by a roof and, looking up out the window of their truck, decided that that was a good roof and it would last during a hurricane. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, it sounds like a Woody Allen scene, and that's exactly what was happening. They'd like drive through a neighborhood without ever getting up and without ever climbing on the roof, inspect and approve an entire subdivision. And guess what happened when the storm came? All the roofs blew off of that subdivision. Well, who should be surprised by that? So now, a year later, nobody's been indicted, nobody's been convicted, nobody's been fired, and the same crew of clowns is out there both building and failing to inspect it again. So the next storm is going to be just as bad or worse.
Well, you certainly are one of the few people born and still living in South Florida. Could you imagine living anywhere else?
Well, I think about it all the time, but it's awfully cold. You know, I mean, I think about Montana sure looks good, but that's for about 3 months of the year. And then the rest of the time, I mean, when you're born and raised in Florida, you have limited options. I mean, to me, Atlanta is the far north. Moving to Atlanta would be like Admiral Byrd going to the poles. I mean, I just can't imagine it.
What do you do about the humidity, though? I've been in Florida in August, and I thought it was just horrible.
I love it. It's good for you.
How?
It just soaks into your skin and your bones, and it's good for you. Actually, what it's good for is thinning out the population a little bit down there. You see, sort of natural, so it's Darwinism at work.
Well, have you started work on your next novel, and is there anything you can tell us about
it? No, I haven't really. I mean, I've kicked around some ideas. I've been so busy with this one, but I think it'll obviously be a sort of a post-hurricane apocalypse novel. I mean, just the things that have happened since the storm have been both so outrageous and touching and interesting that, I mean, it begs for something. I think I've got some ideas. I just haven't really cranked up on it yet.
Well, I thank you so much, Carl Hiaasen, for joining us. Journalist and novelist Carl Hiaasen's latest novel is called Striptease. This is Fresh Air.